All right, everybody, welcome back to an all-new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Of course, we have a very special guest today, the long-awaited, long-since-gone, good old friend of the show, Mobat the Batman.
Hello, hello again.
Dude, yeah, what's been going on? Like, I know we've talked about it a lot privately, but you know, you've tell everybody what your new work has been, because you really shifted out of what you've been doing into new stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I used to mainly work in sports journalism, and I still do that to some point, but like in my volontariat, we talked about it back then, my kind of journalistic, like, what do you call it, traineeship or whatever. There was one focus on TV news, and I realized that's something I want to do. And so I was lucky enough that an opportunity came up, and I started that as well. And now I do news pieces for television most of the time at Bayerischer Rundfunk. And that's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it. But yeah, it's been quite a lot, but pretty cool, and nice to have to add something to the mix. I realized that I won't be able kind of to this. I don't mean this to sound snobby in any way, but to only quotation marks work in sports where you have a lot of repetition, and it's, I don't know. I just like the mix now, and that's cool.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, if you, it's good to get into a position where you can kind of, as the British would say, like, put your fingers in different pies. I thought it was the most disgusting metaphor.
Did they actually say that, or did you just make it up?
No, I didn't make it up. I think it's an expression, yeah, meaning that, you know, you're like a jack of all trades. You're like someone who's, you know, good at a few different things. Like, if he's got his fingers in many pies, he's like doing lots of different things.
I just picture King Charles, like, walking around some, I don't know, official, like, dinner or whatever, just running around sticking his hands into.
He's like the My Germs guy from that scary movie, like, My Germs with a crooked hand. No, man, but that's really cool. I mean, when did you always feel that you wanted to shift away from sports, like, pretty early on, or you just kind of had this epiphany since the pandemic, kind of?
I feel like I always knew that I wanted to cover different topics as well. And I mean, I love sports coverage, etc., and I put so much into it throughout the past few years. But I always, wanted to cover other stories. And I know sports has always been this kind of, as well for me, this kind of platform. And I don't want this to sound wrong, because I enjoy and still enjoy working in sports, but. One part of the deal for me always was that, like, media outlets in Germany, like, probably, like, all over around the world, or the Western world, I don't know too much about other markets, like, struggle a lot, like, especially linear media, like newspapers, television, radio, etc. So there's not a lot of money and not a lot of jobs in a lot of fields. And I realized pretty early that, like, within this sports segment, there still is a lot of money, because there's, like, the last thing people want to see live on TV is sports, because it's like this social happening that needs to happen live. So there's still a lot of money and a lot of jobs within that department, because people, like, still love sports.
Yeah.
And so I realized if I would choose that path, I probably would be able to do certain steps earlier than if it were for I worked for another department. Where there's not that much budget, etc., and that many jobs. And so it always was kind of a strategic decision as well, I gotta say, to get me to some point. And that worked out pretty good, and I still enjoyed the work on the way, but it always was kind of clear to me that at some point I need to add something else to it.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's funny, last time we hung out, we were looking at all these sports clips together, and I had this realization, and I have this realization every now and then about different things, But it's so crazy to wrap your head around the fact that that there's so many enormously popular industries and interests that, you know, someone like me, for example, let's just stick with sports. Like me for sports, of course I know that it's popular, but if I'm not actively engaged in the content, like I'm not following athletes on social media, I'm not following, outlets that talk primarily about leagues and upcoming seasons of any sport. I don't look up the matches online to see, oh, when is FC Bayern or whatever going to play? Like, I don't actively look into it. So I usually don't see anything about sports at all unless it crosses over into pop culture. For example, like the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift relationship. Then, of course, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, Travis Kelce. Okay, I know him now. But or LeBron, because he's just so monumentally famous. Like the major athletes, of course, like, yeah. Shaq and stuff. But I don't know. Since I moved here, especially, I just kind of stepped. My interest just, I don't know, not that I was really a crazy sports head, but my interest really shifted away from things like that. And it's so wild, even when I watch YouTube videos of people talking about literally anything at all, you will see such an enormous community of millions of people obsessed day in and day out with something that you just don't ever think about or that you've never heard of. And that's so interesting to me, because you feel like in today's world you kind of have a bit of a sense of like of it all.
Yeah, you have an overview kind of.
Yeah, but you really don't. Even if you're on your phone and you see all these people and all these faces and all this update stuff every day, there are just millions of other, there's like entire YouTube channels built around like welding.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, what? There's a whole community for that? Yes. Yeah. You know, or like tattoo artistry or like different types of like chemistry experiments, and like even outside of science, like sports back, for example, like makeup tutorials. There's just so many different little niche or even huge industries. That's so interesting to me that I have this awareness every once in a while of like, I've just never thought of that being that popular, but it's huge.
But the funny thing is, I feel like everyone has that border you just mentioned, like the border of what we realize that's happening around us. And I think that it only shifts, because there will always be one. Like because you brought up the sports example, like I feel like I know a lot of and I need to know a lot about sports. And different and even like athletes and important figures of like certain sports that I don't usually follow or cover, but it's just like part of my job to know a little bit about it. And then there's every year there comes out this Forbes list of the like wealthiest all and plus like most marketable athletes worldwide. And in like the top 10 there are like 5 to 6 guys I've never heard of. Because they're Indian cricket players. And that's a whole nother crazy market that happens besides everything that we in Europe and the US like see or realize.
Yeah, right.
So there's always a niche that might be huge, but you won't discover. But one thing that just came to my mind, talk about is like how crazy it is, how many people are so passionate about one thing, such as sports, etc. For me and then for that job decision, like, I obviously have this passion for sports myself. I followed so many things since I was a little child, etc. But making that decision to go into that job field wasn't necessarily only that, but rather, like, the circumstances, like, I grew up in. And I don't mean necessarily my family, but, like, growing up in a village, and you know Oberstdorf, the whole thing is, like, so deeply... infected and affected by sports throughout decades, like the whole tourism thing that keeps the whole region running, runs around like winter sports and hiking and whatsoever. And you have the ski jumping area and the cross country stadium and these kind of, it's like a whole like college sports facility, etc., for German youth athletes to develop, etc. And so it was just like, it just kind of made sense, especially like that I went into the direction of winter sports, and I knew some athletes because they just were kids I grew up with, like Vincent, etc. And so that just kind of made sense from where I'm coming from. And I th- like looking on it now, like back in time, I feel like that's probably even more a bigger part of the decision that the part that also exists, like, okay, I'm I'm fanatic about sports. I just love sports. I want to cover sports. I feel that rational part is bigger than that for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes total sense. That makes total sense. And before I forgot it, actually, just because we're still on that topic, I mean, this taps into perfectly what we were just bringing up, but my our friend Moritz wrote me yesterday that this guy Franz Beckenbauer just died. Who he was like, do you know him? Do you know about this guy? And I was like, I've never heard the name. I don't think I've ever seen a photo. But obviously, an extraordinarily popular, legendary soccer player, won all these championships as a coach and as a player. Born and raised in Giesing, which is, you know, right here in our hood in Munich. And that's just like, it plays right into that topic that we were just, I've never heard of the guy, I've never seen him, but he's huge.
And he was like the very, or yeah, the very first like huge soccer player that went to play in the U.S.
Oh, he in was New the York. First.
Yeah, him and Pelé. You probably heard about Pelé, like this Brazilian legend died like last year.
I'm sure I've heard this. I mean, I think Moritz mentioned him too, this name, yeah. But I...
And they played in New York together. There's like the story of Franz Beckenbauer at some point. Like the whole hype here was too much for him. And like people went crazy about him getting divorced or starting a new relationship after being married and having kids before and being like this idol of like, yeah, this idol of like a family dad and got everything running and the wife and kids, etc. At some point, like he got a new girlfriend and people were not having it. And so he was like, okay, fuck you guys. I'm just going to New York because nobody knows me there and I can do whatever the fuck I want.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I can imagine that's kind of a relief. I mean, when I watched this David Beckham thing and he went to America to play, I completely forgot that he did that. Like, I just didn't register that he did that at all.
Dude, and this has been like one of the craziest business deal ever in soccer so far, because part of Beckham's deal back then as a player was the right to buy a future like MLS franchise in the MLS league for like $25 million, and he did that with Miami. He now runs the team in Miami, who just brought in Lionel Messi last year, and through that move alone, like, he like must have made so much money. That's crazy,
dude. He must have boatloads of money. But what I find, what I really liked about, like, I thought I didn't like him just because the way he's portrayed in the media, but that wasn't his fault. But it was just, you know, pretty guy, dating a Spice Girl, super rich, soccer player, sexy, blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, like, he's probably a dick. And then this documentary kind of turned it all around where I thought, you know, but he's kind of funny. And, you know, he knows, he's not, like, not self-aware. There was that great scene in that first episode with, I forgot her name, Victoria. Yeah. Victoria? Spice?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where he's...
That's her name, Victoria Spice.
Victoria Spice. Not Victoria Beckham, but Victoria Spice. And she's talking about, like, growing up, like, her father was hard work, working class, and he leans in the door in her interview and is like, what did your father drive you to school and every day? And she's like, no, that's not the point. He's like, what did he drive you? It's a simple answer. She's like, my father had a Rolls Royce.
Be honest.
Thank you. Yeah, be honest. My dad had a Rolls Royce. Thank you. Closes the door. I was like, that's amazing. It's her interview. And he just, like, shuts the whole, like, fakery down. Yeah. I thought that was really funny. Yeah,
he's a funny guy, and it's also like I'm not so much on Instagram anymore, but last time I was, I just somehow ended up on her channel, and she like just documents like random moments with David Beckham with her husband. And one thing I found pretty cute is that for Christmas, what she got him was a barn for like chicken. Like a bunch of chickens coop. With chickens in it. And she just films him, like him enjoying this the society of his new like roommates, a barn of chickens.
Dude, at some point it's like, what do you get the person who can afford anything, you know? I find that curious. There's, you know, a few people I know that have quite a bit of money, and I always wonder what their Christmas gifts.
Excuse-moi.
I have friends who have money. But I always wonder, I was trying to take a little look at their presents, like, well, what do you get someone like that who can and does just get what they want, you know? Even I have two different friends who are like, you know, they're not like rich people, but they're doing great, you know, like one's a doctor and one works in fashion, and they're totally doing great, you know, but it's still not like in the sense that you'd be nervous to be around them, like, oh man, they're worth like 10, you know, $100 million or something. But they're wealthy, they're doing good. And I asked them over Christmas time, like, hey, so, you know, what did you guys get each other? And they said, yeah, well, you know, throughout the year we just buy whatever we want, so we just said nothing. And I was like, nothing? Like, not even like a little thing of chocolate? You know, like just the act of just giving something. But I think some people with all the money in the world do something like the Beckhams, where it's like, here's a chicken coop because you want homemade egg, you want fresh eggs every day or whatever. And then there's people like them who just say, well, we get what we want, so we just shook hands.
But I don't want to like do a full like Christmas wrap up again, but is that only a German thing? Because I feel like there's so many people around me who are like, yeah, we've decided to have no gifts this year because it only stresses people out to get them, etc. And the whole hype's not worth it. So in our family, we just decided to not have any gifts. Is that only a German thing, or do you know that from the States as well?
I don't know if that's culturally specific. I've heard of people doing that for anniversaries and for certain birthdays, like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to have a big party.
I hate you. You don't get a gift.
Yeah, you don't get one anyway. But for Christmas, I don't know that I've heard that often. I mean, I guess now I've met some people that do it. And I guess it happens a lot more as you get older. Like, if you've been together a long time and people get into their, you know, anywhere from like late 30s on, they're just like, yeah, well, you know, I just bought this thing last month. I don't really need anything right now. Don't get me anything. But I find it like, I get it for anniversaries or birthdays. That's, you know, like anniversaries are just like only agreements, but that's only an agreement between the couple. So I get if they're like, hey, it's just us we're talking about here.
But on Christmas, made a deal with Santa Claus.
Dude, it's like, you know, it's just, it's nice. It's nice. Even if you know, my parents often do a thing where like one of them will go get their own gift. And you know, then at least, you know, it's wrapped up sometimes, or they go to dinner or something. It's just like this, I like this act, even if it's just like a little, sometimes I get like, from Ify's sister, sometimes I'll get like a coffee mug, but with some homemade cookies in it, you know, as part of something else, but it's still this nice little, like, even if that was it, that would be so nice. Like, I drink coffee, I like coffee mugs, sure, and homemade cookies, can't go wrong. Yeah, you know, so hey, that's cool. I would never say like, don't make me Christmas cookies next year. I don't need any. You know, it's like, I like that gesture, even if it's very, very small. Yeah,
like that. I feel the same way. Like this kind of like act of appreciation, somehow.
Yeah, I think it's more of a symbol of like I'm thinking of you, or I thought of you. You know, even if it's just the card. Like a lot of friends. I can just give a card to sometimes, like just in the moment. Oh, right, I'm going to go to this thing. Well, let me make sure and write a nice card. And I think even if, you know, because I think about that, if I were just to get the card, that's enough. Because it's just these words, and it's just saying, hey, you know, you're on my heart, and, you know, I hope you have a great time. I think what has happened to me over the years, though, is I have had less pressure. I think it happens when you get older, but I've had less pressure to text basically everyone I've ever had some sort of friendship with to have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Like all through my early 20s and stuff, I had such a pressure, especially, or even my first year in Germany, all my friends back home, I called and wrote everybody that I knew, like, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, and then like Happy New Year. I had all this pressure, and I had like FaceTime calls with Vivi when she was in Spain as the clock turned 12, and it was this whole, like, so much pressure of, like, we have to, you know, celebrate it all. And I think as you get older, it's just more of like, well, we're all kind of just doing things either with our own families, or everyone has a partner or a small group of friends. They've already planned something with months ago. You don't have to text everybody that you've ever had some sort of friendship with to have a happy new year. If you contact them sometime in January, you're going to say it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I just stopped that as well. I just don't do it anymore.
Yeah, like, I don't think it makes any sense. You know, I mean, it's not necessary.
At times I feel bad for it because, you know, it, like, I tend to be a bad texter.
There's worse things to be.
I just stopped that. Like, I respond on, like, messages that come in. And probably if by any chance I think about people I haven't seen in a long time and I wanted to reach out to them anyway, obviously you wish them a happy new year and stuff, but for me it was the same, like this kind of shit, it's Christmas. Now I have to go through X amount of contacts, and for each and every one I kind of feel the pressure to write an individually lovely message to everybody.
Right, right. But everyone's working and you're working and it doesn't make sense anymore to try and dedicate that time. Also, no. Also to like get who you're getting gifts for around Christmas time, that list has dwindled down tremendously for me. Like, I used to think, well, man, I have to, like, not only do I have to join in these group gifts, but I have to do my own individual, unique thing for each of these, you know, 10 or 15 people, plus the cards for these individual people. And now it's trimmed down so much. It's really, like, it shaves down more and more to, like, okay, it's just your partner, or, like, where are you spending Christmas? Is it with, like, with their parents? Then, of course, you're going to write some nice extra cards on top. Yeah. You're going to pitch in for a group gift. But in general, that laundry list that I used to have, that I used to think I had to contribute, has really just shaved off. Like, it's filtered down a crazy amount. But I have a feeling that's just normal. People are, yeah, you know, people are just working. People, you know, people start having kids and having families, and I think it's just the amount of effort into something that doesn't matter as much as you thought it does. Doesn't mean you love them less or don't feel the same way about their friendship. It's just like they also subconsciously understand, like, oh, well, I wouldn't have even thought to do that. I was with my family, you know, like, it's just relaxed. It's more relaxed.
Yeah. Sorry. I feel like I also kind of pulled myself more out of that through that, like, looking at my job through the transition from a world where, like, growing up, etc., and still through university, like, this whole 2 weeks around Christmas used to be everybody's on vacation, on holidays. So nobody's working, everybody's relaxing, hanging out, meeting each other, having fun, etc. Coming from there to a world where, like, you probably take, like, one Christmas day off and then you're back to work, like, back to everyday life. And so somehow that makes you, like, easier forget about all these other things. Obviously, you still try to appreciate the people you love and that you spend the time you have with around the holidays. But I feel that sped up the whole process of me, like, getting to a point where I'm like, whatever, next Christmas will come.
Dude, I think I still find it very crazy that a lot of people are supposed to work between the, you know, I think, you know, Germany, Christmas is 24th, but there's still like these 3 days or whatever. I think it's in the States, the Christmas day is 25th. And I think it's really weird that people work from the 26th or 27th up until the 31st. And then maybe, I think depending on the day, they're off for the first, I think they are, but I think this year it was a weekend, so they got kind of screwed. But I find that really weird that is, like, of course you're going, like, my dad was back at work the 26th, and I don't think he would have been off the first if it hadn't been a Sunday or Saturday, whatever it was. But I think that's kind of bogus. I mean, I think a lot of people probably feel that way, and I'm lucky that I don't have to. But I see, you know, the general consensus through TikTok and stuff of people, like, you know, working begrudgingly under a blanket, you know, on their parents' sofa on the 28th, like doing office Outlook emails. And I'm like, that's so weird to me. That feels like the no man's land. That feels like that's just a week. Can't they just all have that week off? That's crazy.
But so many are doing that, actually. And I feel that's pretty strong in Germany, that so many like little businesses, etc., have their, like, what do you call it? Betriebsferien, you call it in German. It's like they shut down the like everybody in this business is on holiday, on vacation for a week. Like they shut down the whole thing for a week. That happens quite often. So, and I'm not sure, you've been in Oberstdorf for quite a while, but being here in Munich in between like Christmas and New Year's, up until like, yeah, this, like, it's Tuesday the 9th now, up until this Sunday, so 7th, the city was so empty. It's been crazy. Like, and yesterday it's been, everybody's coming back. But like the whole city has been empty. No cars, nobody on the subway. The bars have been like, I've been to bars where usually if you come in after like 7 or 7:30, no chance to even like stand in the back somewhere. And I was walking in at like 8, 8:30 and just like I could choose a seat anywhere. I was like, where is everybody? And so I feel like a lot of people like take this time off and probably also seem, at least for Munich, at least seem to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I think it's just, people just want to get out more. I heard a lot of people going skiing. It's very German as well, but a lot of people going skiing. Spanking Sport. Oh, dude, did you see? Maybe you didn't see it because you're not on Instagram so much, but the guy who does my graphics, who did like the stickers for Ich liebe Sommer, and the he came up with another sticker design. He
does it say Ich liebe Winter?
No, but he made, if you go to Instagram and you want to make a story, let's say I want to take a little, I'll make a little clip of you there. I'll show you what happens. You can, this stickers button at the top where you can access like GIFs or questions or mentions, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's the option for the GIF in the middle. So if you click GIF option, you want to add that to your story, you type in Jordan Prince, and he made 5 GIFs that you can use in your story. I'll show you. One is like, hey, like that.
What? I'm just, nice.
That one, and he made, this. For those who can't see, it's just the word hey in a funny way. Then there's one of my face with the Ich liebe Sommer. My favorite one, I think, still, is this rotating, it's my name with the, nice, with the crown.
Jordan. So you got your own set of gifts.
Yeah, basically, yeah, like my own, there's like 5 on there, and they're, people were asking if they could have them added as their like Telegram stickers and on WhatsApp. I don't know how easy that is to do. I didn't know that it was this quick and easy to throw GIFs on. I guess you just upload them to like Imgur or something. I don't know. I don't know how easy it is to upload things to that kind of platform. But I guess it's not so hard because he just does it. He just does it.
And so that's what you got for Christmas. Me after. No GIFs, just GIFs.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny too. He's a Spanish guy and he was writing me in English, of course. And his keyboard was correcting him. So I could not understand what he was saying. I couldn't understand the words he was saying. He was like, hey, Jordan, check your name for Instagram GIFs, like with the T, like GIFs. I left something for you. Just search Jordan Prince and have fun. And I went, what? I don't understand. And he goes, what? Did you saw it? And I was like, I don't understand the words that you're saying. I was like, I don't understand what you've told me. And he goes, and this is even worse. Ah, okay, go to stories, pick any image and open the gift and put your name on the search. What? And Jordan Prince and voila. I said, what? And then I checked out what he sent a picture. I was like, oh, go to GIF in the stories and type my name.
Nah.
And then I sent him a voice message like, man, you were writing gift. I kept thinking you sent me gifts and there was nothing outside my door. And I was like, type my name on the search of what? Like, search what? Like a UPS website or something? Like, what are you talking about? Finally, we figured it out. But yeah, his name's Leo. He's really cool. I'm going to meet him for the first time on Saturday at the live show. The live show is finally.
Nice. We have to talk about that.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It's all I'm doing basically from morning to night right now is just working on the live show.
Like, if you can do that without like spoiling too much, I
sure,
said
yeah,
cannot be. I mean, but what's gonna happen there? Like, I've been to many shows with you, but you played music there, so I've no idea what you're up to.
Oh, that's right. You can't be there. I forgot about that. Well, we can talk about it. We'll have to do an after show episode for sure.
Yes.
Because then we will have the footage and then you can watch most of the show, if not like at least the highlights.
We can do a Mo reaction show.
We can do a Mo reaction. Oh, that'd be funny. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I mean, obviously I don't want to spoil what I'm going to be talking about. I even sent a funny picture yesterday. Again, to mention our friend Moritz, it was like we were talking about the show and I took a picture of my monitors with like the Word document up and I redacted the lines. I was like, no, 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 mister. I would spoil myself if this were your show. I know how you are. You're going to read it and spoil it. But yeah, I'm really excited. It's a lot of work. It's a whole new like undertaking for me. It's more like comedy storytelling presentation style. With some music in it, so it's far more like stand-up storytelling, sort of like interactive variety show sort of things with the audience than it is music. But there is some music in it, and yeah, it's taken a lot of different shapes and forms. I'm basically at the point now where I have it, and I am just running it a lot so that I can try and get as much of the jokes and the rhythms memorized like a script as possible. And I'm timing it to see how long it is. Because I didn't want to do a show. Because the thing is, with Mila, I'm very happy it's sold out. But I didn't consider that it, of course, it's standing only. So I was thinking, well, you know, for music, you can get away with that. Because people, you know, can kind of sway and they're not, you know. But if it's like a comedy show, usually people are seated.
That's true, you know, but I still find find it funny that you say you can get away with that with music, while here it is like completely normal to stand during a rock show or whatever.
I guess I mean like even with a solo acoustic
but
show,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
I guess
it's not like danceable, but you kind of don't think about standing because you're like, yeah, it's music.
Okay, but like that's interesting because I like you said, you expect a comedy show or something like that to be seated. And I expected that they would kind of put up chairs or something.
I think that's just my mistake going into it because I probably could have spoken to Mila about putting chairs in, but it would have greatly cut down on the capacity.
Yeah.
You know, then we would have, you know, I think they said even from the emails that we could have done like 3 back-to-back shows, which would have been cool. But if we had done chairs, we would have had to do that. We would have just had to do that because I think the full capacity is like 250. I think the mm-hmm. full like staff and everything is like really 250 maximum. And that's going to be people standing from the front of the stage to that back bar.
Yeah.
Which I've never seen before from the stage, so that'll be really crazy. but yeah, I didn't want to go too long, exactly. That's what I meant to say. For that reason. I didn't want to have a very, very long show, but I didn't want to have it so short that people are questioning if I had enough material. Mm-hmm. So the sweet spot was kind of trying to aim for an hour, like full on from entrance to exit, like a full hour, so that people get their money's worth and they're kind of constantly entertained and they can feel out gaps when they want to, you know, go for a smoke or go to the bathroom or something. Because it's not like a theater show where they're not allowed to leave or something. But I also didn't want to do like 90 minutes where then people's feet start to ache and they kind of look around for like a bench, you know. I know there's people there of all ages as well, so I didn't want... Yeah, I'm just very conscious of the standing, but maybe no one's going to think about that but me, hopefully.
Maybe you can work something out on that without wanting to stress you out even more, but maybe, I don't know, you can... Make people exercise a little bit or do something.
Make some sport while
make them do something.
Yeah, true, true. I was actually thinking...
And you can crowd surf. That's a big advantage.
That's true. I can finally crowd serve. Maybe at the end of the show. I was thinking, it might be a perfect venue. Like, if this goes well, I'd love to do a little tour. It might be, I hope it's not too late to try and get something for later this year. But I'd love to do, like, you know, some small venues, you know, maybe 150 to 250 size, like, you know, a couple in Berlin, maybe one in Hamburg, Frankfurt, you know, whatever. And then it'd be nice to come back to Munich later in the year because a lot of people didn't get to see this show. And it would be cool to maybe do the Lustspielhaus.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
Because that's, you know, I think it's like 300, 350, something like that. Can you say that word again? Seated. Huh?
Can you say that word again?
Lustspielhaus.
Lustspielhaus. It sounds even even more erotic when you say it.
The Lust Spielhaus. It's a beautiful, like, golden venue with red curtains and seated white cloth tables. And it, I think it would be perfect for something like that. But yeah, the show, it's, I think it's very funny. I hope I find it funny. And it's basically, yeah, like a threaded together series of stories and very embarrassing, funny experiences, all kind of trying to balance this, energy that people enjoy from the videos, you know, sort of balancing out, well, this is something that happened to me. This is what it was like when I grew up, and then kind of contrasting that with, but this is how it is in Germany, and this is how, you know, kind of how I felt when I experienced this in Germany. Here's a story about when that took place. And yeah, so I basically have built this hour, and I've just been practicing the order and like making some bullet points so I can kind of have like a little skeleton to keep myself on track on stage, because, you know, I think a main difference to give people a better idea of it, it's, I think a better way to describe it is it's not a stand-up show. It's not like a stand-up special. It's like I'm presenting something. It's like, you know, there's if everything goes right from the venue, there is a projector. I'm going to have like some images there that kind of emphasize jokes that kind of follow along with what I'm doing. So there's, you know, it's more variety. There's things to look at. There's some music, there's some stories, and then there's some interactive things with the audience. So I'm not ashamed to have like some sort of iPad or a computer next to me that helps me kind of stay on track with what I'm doing. I think if this was more pure stand-up, I would have had to, you know, like practice this, you know, 3-4 nights a week at different stand-up spots for months and months and months and months. But it's not that. And I still do want to practice it, and I still want to get things perfect down the road. But I think it's better probably for the audience to not think of it as like a stand-up special, but more as like presentation, storytelling, comedy, music, variety.
Big
it's, like
advantage
just, it's more for, of a mixture.
Sorry. Big advantage for you, even though I must say like the stand-up comedy scene is really growing in Germany and also Munich. But your advantage is still like Germans are not used to stand-up comedy, so they won't have any expectations in that kind of direction.
Yeah, maybe that's my luck, yeah.
But I also think like it's, isn't that like nice that you got yourself into a position where you can do that kind of show and people will come?
Oh my
Plus,
God,
you're
yeah.
you're in that kind of, I feel like you're in that sweet spot where you can just lay out your everything that's in your head, everything you created throughout the past years, consciously yeah. or unconsciously, and just to put it in a form as you like without having to, I don't know, fit into some form of convenience or tradition or whatever. Just do what the Jordan Prince people come to see does.
Yeah, I think I'm very lucky in that way that the perception and the desire from the audience to see what they want to see, I think it kind of gives me a lot of freedom in that way for sure. And I think it's such a crazy cool privileged position to after all these years of trying to, you know, build some sort of audience in the way that I was doing it, now I can do it in a different way that I also really enjoy. That's not sacrificing anything. It's not like, oh, I do it even though I don't love it. But no, I love it. And it's really lucky that I can do something I love and for the first time ever have the ability to sell out. I mean, it sold out in like 2 hours.
That's
you
crazy.
Know? That's crazy. That's never happened. And now I know that there's enough people in Munich where I could come back and do the Lustspielhaus, or maybe in a few years, you know, ideally, maybe in a few years, I could do something even as big and open as like the Mufadhalle, but seated, you know, so maybe, you know, I don't know, that's a long ways away, but I would love to do like a bigger hall with a seated area and then, you know, have like, I think I still always like this idea of having like a screen and a guitar and a little laptop or something with me and just having like a little bit multimedia and down the road even being able to play more games with the audio from the soundboard and the lights, people timing things. Like I would want to have a whole show that you never know what's going to happen next. And it's just jokes and some improv and some storytelling. And what I was really happy about, what I felt very lucky about going into this, was that I had too much stuff. My first write through of this whole thing, I had way too much stuff, which was really good for me just to cut back and cut back and cut back and save things for other shows or save things for other things. But I was worried I wouldn't have enough.
Okay, but because I find that interesting, because I do often have the same problem in my job, but like when I lay down a script and got the footage for a film, journalistic film for a new show, whatever. But I got, like, on these television shows, you get pretty strict, like, timing. So if they tell you you got a minute and 30 seconds or you got 2 minutes, you better match that. And oftentimes you have way too much and way too much you want to tell. And then cutting back is, like, the hardest thing to do.
Right,
but I find it funny that you tell me like that. It's a nice feeling to know. Oh, I got more stuff and more stuff, but I can keep that and use it somewhere else.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's I have to remind myself constantly that it's not the concept of like killing your darlings. I don't know if you know that expression.
Yeah.
It's not that in this context, because I can and will just use these. You know, I've used things like that in videos. I can use them for future live shows. I have a feeling this will go well. Not that I want to jinx it, but I just feel like, you know, I have a lot of friends there and I feel like the hype is good and people are excited to go. They're excited to do it. So I feel like I have a little bit of a leeway, like a little mercy. I think I have a lot of forgiveness right up front from them to get my bearings and to calm down and to breathe. The only thing I'm really, really nervous about is that at least for the first 10 minutes that I'm going to be racing through my jokes and my stories. Like that's my biggest problem. And that's what I keep trying to fix every time I run the show, is slowing down. There's a fantastic quote that's also like words of wisdom from this comedian, Ron White, that he told to a stand-up comic once. And I really like it. And he said, if you think you're doing bad, slow down. If you think you're doing really good, slow down. and dude, that's fantastic advice, because even if I'm, like I was running it with Efi and stuff too, and every time I would think that me talking at this speed adds humor to the moment, she would always say, we'd get to the next segment where it's like time to stop and talk notes about that section, and she'd say, you know, that part's really funny, but you have to slow down. You're like, you're running out of breath. And, you know, I can tell you're, you know, excited about this or that, but you just have to slow down. And then when I would run it again, if I'm literally like forcing myself, like even in this moment, right now, if I go against all my instincts and literally just try to say things slower, the stories come out better, and honestly, it helps me remind myself that there's people in the audience whose English is not their first language.
Yeah, that's a big point, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Germans in the audience, and Bayerischer Rundfunk, their program Capriccio, they're doing a whole piece on this.
That's so my boys.
I also... Yeah! Do you know Maximilian? There's probably 1,000 Maximilians working there.
I'm not sure. I just said that because I work there as well, but I'm pretty sure I don't know them. But I hope they'll do a great job.
I just have him as Maximilian Capriccio, just like Victoria Spice. but he's very, very nice. But he, yeah, we're going to, they're doing the show and, you know, we have a whole segment. We're going to do like a post-show interview the next day. So I have to remind myself too that I think that's my biggest obstacle. I think the show is funny. I'm really proud of it. It's been a lot of hard work and it's going to be the culmination of like the whole year of like building this new audience. So it means a lot to me as well. It has a lot of like importance to me, but my biggest obstacle will be just to catch my breath.
No.
And slow down. That way it's just the story is clear and the jokes are clear. I have like little taglines at the end of some things that I think are super funny. But if I breeze through them, most people won't register that I said it. And then I'll think, oh, it wasn't funny. And then I'll get insecure. But really, they just don't hear it. You know, so I have to also just be cool. And if something doesn't laugh that, you know, maybe it's not funny. Maybe they didn't hear it. Just keep going. Just stay cool. Yeah, but I'm really excited. I'm basically getting messages back from Mila, hopefully today, about some of the logistics of the PowerPoint that I want to set up. And then I'll just have like, yeah, computer next to me to click through the slides and yeah, guitar, and that's it.
I just really gotta kinda giggle every time I wrap my head around the fact that like knowing you from when you came over to Germany and all your struggles you went through with that language, with the people, the country, and everything. And you just kind of developed that loophole. We talked about this before regarding your success in social media. But you just like created that loophole of where, and surely I don't want this to sound you like,
you're
doing great and like during Germany, etc. But you just created this space for yourself where you don't have to adapt to the people, but rather they adapt to what you do. And they come to see a show and it's sold out within 2 hours. How cool is that?
Dude, I'm telling you, I think about this every day. I can't believe it myself. I'm so, so thankful for that. And did I tell you, I told you when we hung out privately, but that I'm followed by Diana Kruger now.
You told me.
Like, what is this world? I literally, it's so funny. It's so,
next thing.
It's so childish, but I literally go and I check every day, like, did she unfollow? Is she bored now? Did she follow by mistake? But actually, I wrote her a message.
Did you send her a pair of John Prince socks?
Hey,
that would be the next
step. She still follows, baby. I wrote her. The thing is, I do want to involve her in some stuff. Like, you know, we have these talks about this television show and stuff, and maybe it could be possible with the production company, you know, behind me on this to maybe even see if I could ask her for a cameo or something. And I would love to send her some stuff. Like when the sports socks go live, when those go public, I'm definitely going to send a few out to some important people. I'm going to debut that merch at the show on Saturday, but they're not going to be up on a public shop. Maybe probably until next month or so. I'm working out a thing with my agency now, where I'd like to set up an e-commerce shop through maybe Shopify or something, but have all the socks at their office. So that way, when orders come in, because I'm sure the first week or so that they're launched is going to be a few hundred orders. And I think when everything comes in, I can't be the guy alone, like with these stickers, where I go by myself to the post office and stand in line with a stack of like, you know, 45 packages of socks to mail off to different countries. I just want to like, the website should be where they pay for the shipping. And they get like a Jordan Prince package. I'm going to order like Jordan Prince labeled packaging. That's really affordable and looks nice. And then they get the socks inside with some free stickers and just ship it off. And then they have a team of people. They can have like 5 or 6 people mailing the socks off until things slow down. So I have to get that set up first.
Did you just say, you got so many people, you'll be sending out socks, you'll be sending out socks, and you'll be sending out socks as well.
It was a little bit of a two-way street, but I definitely told them like, guys, I need help. I can't be doing this. I can't do this. I wrote them for sure. Like, hey, I'm going to need help with this merch. I don't know what to do. Do you know anybody or have anything? And then that's why actually I have to go now because I have a call with the agency the lead guy, like the main owner of the agency, to talk exactly about this situation. So I have to go now.
But, I have one last question.
Mo, this was so much fun, man. Oh, yeah, one more question.
Any New Year's resolutions?
I think I was asked this before, and I said less screen time when I'm in my private life.
Very good. I got one.
Maybe I can put some limits on my social media when I'm not shooting a video.
That's good. I got only one. I can show it to you. I have the list here.
It says to do on 2024, be on Artsy Fartsy Immigrants.
That's everything I need to accomplish this year.
Yeah, man. You got to be on the show more often. This was super fun. This was really, it's always a blast, man.
I want to talk about your live show when it's done. All the best for that.
Yeah. Thank
because
you.
I want to see
it's Saturday,
and
then we can try and talk after. So Monday of next week, we're leaving for a 2-week trip to Gran Canaria.
Oh, that's nice.
24 degrees there, I think. It's going to be a really big difference. My first time ever being there. So it'd be a nice, like, you know, release from the show and everything.
Very good.
But probably we can do, if you record it, we could do it just like through my phone, but you'd have my phone audio that you'd mix with your thing. But then it would be easy.
We'll check something out.
Or we do it when I'm back.
Yeah.
We can also just do it like this when I'm back. But yeah, dude, I have to sign off. But thank you for being on. It was really great to have you back on. This is so much fun. It's always, always, always never enough, man.
I can only give that back. It's so much fun, and I said this a few times before that I try to want to get back more often, but actually this time I got a little more of free time on my hands coming up.
Awesome.
Through the next month, so I hope we can make this work. I really will do my best to make it work.
Dude, and if Monday or Tuesday around this time works for you, that's that's always good for me.
We can check something out. I think especially Tuesday looks good. But we'll talk through that. Have the best live show it could possibly be. I am sure people will love it. And I hope to talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, bye, guys. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.